talk given Saturday, 3rd January, 1976. Let us consider together this afternoon this question of attentiveness and its deep significance, and in association with attentiveness, the senses and the functioning of the senses. You may remember that we touched upon the nature of the attentiveness of the perfected Holy One during the talks at the end of March last year. Let us try to follow this very meditatively, with intense, effortless concentration. What distinguishes perfect attentiveness? The perfect attentiveness is one in which there is no awareness of separate self-consciousness. None at all. Now, if there is no awareness of separate self-consciousness, there is no interference caused by all the conditioning of one's own mind. This is a very important point to understand. The implication here is that everything that we call ill, everything which is of the nature of an obstruction in the mind or an impurity in the psyche, is completely absent. Such perfect attentiveness implies the state of the utmost purity, the final purity of being has been realized. That person is quite rightly called the Holy One, the Sinless One. He is the Incorruptible One. He is the one who is no longer liable to delusion. One who does not raise up any illusory pictures through the functioning of imagination, the image-making faculty. He is free of the domination upon his perceptiveness. He is free of the domination of all images, which are only pictures of reality, but which are always mistaken for reality by the imperfect one. This is something of the nature of perfect attentiveness. These images, these imperfections of the mind, the biases, prejudices, preconceptions, assumptions, and so forth, these taints, these defilements of the heart, greed and hate and delusion and all the rest of it, all of these prevent seeing truly. When one sees truly, it is no longer the individual being as we see him and know him who is seeing. Through him, transcendence itself sees. Don't try to picture this seeing. Try and feel with the utmost intensity you are capable of the quality, the feel of this kind of seeing. When the Holy One looks, Brahman, Sambodhi, wisdom itself, truth itself, God, use any word you like, the Absolute is seeing. Therefore, that seeing is of a dimension of mind and consciousness which utterly transcends seeing as you and I ordinarily experience as seeing. Of the profoundest insights, just don't belong to that plane. That plane, that condition of being, which is the condition of revelation, is the utterly pure state, the transcendent state. It is the supreme religious experiencing. What man through the ages has sought, tries to realize, is actually there. And it is actually there fundamentally by virtue of the fact that the I consciousness, the isolative, separative I consciousness, is no longer there. There is nothing in the functioning of that living being which stands between him and the totality. He is not lost in the totality. He is completely integrated into that totality. As long as the organism is alive, his identity is there. But there is no kind of awareness of that identity which obstructs transcendence from functioning through him. Now you see, what has happened to the individual? For the first time in his life, and if it has happened completely and fully, that first time is the second and the third and the time which is infinite. It is eternity. Time is gone. It is the permanent state, the absolute state. But it is convenient to talk in terms of the first time. It is the first time that that person is the living representative in every real sense of what it means to be a human being. It is necessary for us at least to get the feel of this with our whole being, not merely with the intellectual part of the mind, which inevitably will, and it has to, form concepts in relation to this. Otherwise there is no stirring at all to start with, in order to wake up. But if you get the feel of this, then you will realize what is implied in the full human being who is the true individual, in whom egohood in the real sense has been realized. Egohood in the real sense, in the perfect human sense, is egohood which is completely free of the defilement of egoism, which means, therefore, that no longer does that person live in terms of drawing the world unto himself. He is the embodiment of perfect renunciation, which means non-grasping and complete relinquishment, which means utter freedom. These are the implications. So you see the significance of perfect attentiveness. The state where the separate selfness has completely disappeared, and only the totality manifests through the particular self. This is the great mystery of it. This is the beauty and the marvel and the wonder of it. For it tells us precisely what our business is as far as living the human life, the religious life in the supreme sense, is concerned. if one begins to awake to this and begins to thrill in response to it, one finds that before long it becomes a constant background for our usual mode of awareness, our ordinary state of consciousness. And when it becomes a background, it so influences our ordinary state of consciousness that we always are aware when and where we go wrong. In other words, when and where we become self-centered and isolatively conscious. Isolative consciousness is the great power for keeping us in a condition of sin, in the sense of disunity with the totality, within the totality. Insofar as that ignorant state of consciousness, this is the true meaning of avidya, of avidya, this is the true ignorance. As long as that state of consciousness is there, present at any time, in any shape or form, there are defilements. The mind is in a defiled condition. And all that we call the unvirtuous finds expression. When the defilements are absent, what we ambivalently call the virtuous condition is also out. But you will say, dear me, then what? Then that transcendent condition where you have overpassed the duality, the conflicting opposites, is present. And beyond that, no human being can go. These things have to become as clear and as simple as possible to the mind, the intellectual part of the mind. This is the real intellect. As to use the Latin word, the true nous, to use the Greek word, the true buddhi, to use the Indian word. You see how easy it is to misinterpret these words. The perfected holy ones, the great mystics, those who had realized, those who did not stop at the stage of seeing the vision and then knowing the sorrow of the fading of that vision at times, but who actually realized it so that they were that vision forever and ever. They had no illusions regarding the meaning of buddhi or nous or intellectus. We use the phrase, the wisdom of God. This is a phrase which tries to convey something like what we are attempting to see for ourselves at this moment. You have to see with all the intensity you are capable of. That is, you have to feel it. You have to become what you see and feel. You have to see that this state of wholeness, this holiness, is a transcendent condition realized here now, quite simply, quite straightforwardly. When it happens to you, through you, then your brain, your mind will know it. Oh, of course it is so. It's funny how I didn't see it before. You see, that's what happens. All the clouds have vanished. And there's light all around. But as a preliminary step, it is well worthwhile knowing that although the light of the sun is hidden by all the thick black clouds, beyond that is that pure light. But if you didn't know that at all, and you can only know it first through the intellectual processes, you can know about it through the intellectual processes. If you didn't know that, you could not set your sights upon transcendence. And the next point in this connection is that when one realizes that state of complete and total attentiveness, one is the true individual. When egohood in its perfect purity and fullness is realized, then you are no longer a harmony within yourself only. You are in complete and total relationship with the whole environment. So you see, the limitations imposed upon our mind and our consciousness by the fact of an organism which has this particular size and this particular functioning is completely overpassed. You've transcended that. You're free in mind and consciousness. You are at one with totality in the real sense. Now, let us consider for a little while this question of the senses and the operation of the senses. I started off by saying transcendence sees through you when you are utterly free of isolative self-consciousness and you are wholly attentive. Then transcendence sees through you. If transcendence sees through you, it sees transcendentally. That is to say, its seeing is not restricted to size, shape, form, the moving event, the process, the qualities, the characteristics, and so forth and so forth. It is not restricted to anything finite. You will see all the elements of finitude also, but simultaneously you will see totality in the finite. That is to say, you will be conscious of the finite, you will be observant of the finite, in terms of the finite as well as the infinite. And by being conscious of the finite in terms of the integration of the finite and the infinite, you see the finite free, that is to say, your seeing is free of the limitations imposed upon the mind by finitude, by shape, by size, by color, by function, and so forth and so forth. You see the significance of this in terms of human living. When you see this way, you will see the facts of the finite as they are. Here is a riot taking place outside in the street, we'll say. But you will also completely transcend the limitations upon the mind imposed by the actual fact of the riot, which of course is there. There is pain, there is breaking of things and noise and all the rest of it going on. But at the same time, you are fully awake to the infinite, and all this, which is painful and terrible, is completely integrated into that infinite. Now, unless one has had a touch of this, one will always ask the wrong question. One will ask, but in which way does this marvelous, airy, fairy, transcendent consciousness stop the rioting? Of course it won't. Of course it shouldn't. Sounds a terrible thing to say. The rioting is the process which is inevitably there because such and such forces have operated. And therefore that must go on, that must work itself out. But you are no longer participating in the production of forces for greater disharmony. On the contrary, the very fact that you, because of your transcendent vision, are capable of remaining inwardly completely poised, this is the supreme meaning of the word upekha in both Buddhist and Hindu teachings. Because you are capable of remaining supremely poised, not indifferent, but poised, you are able to absorb all that is going on there into your own psyche, utterly free of any reaction of hate or fear or annoyance or the puerility of wishing it otherwise. You may say, but what a terrible doctrine, too austere for us. Of course it is too austere for me as I am here. But if I don't start at least with seeing something of the greater truth, I shan't be able to take a single step forward towards it. So now you see what happens when this profounder individuality is realized. This is one of the deep meanings of the life of the yogi. What is the whole discipline of yoga concerned with? The release of this state of the individual, this capacity for complete and total attentiveness, this utter freedom from every defilement, this functioning continuously in the state of perfect purity. This is yoga. This is the religious life in its fullness. And when one is like that, what is one's influence upon one's surrounding? Each one of us, as we are, we all exert a certain influence by virtue of our living presence upon the environment. We cannot help it. We cannot avoid it. Because we are alive, we inevitably exercise such and such an influence. This is just a plain physical fact, not merely a psychological or a spiritual fact. It's a straightforward, total fact that we constantly exercise an influence. What is the kind of influence that I exercise? I as I am. But if I as I am now am transformed into the true, perfect human, the real human, then what sort of an influence flows out from me? Not merely the influence of a person who, in my present state, am a block, an obstruction to the light and the beauty and the perfection of transcendence, but I'm a completely open vessel to transcendence. And therefore, it is no longer my influence, as in the case when I was the imperfect person, but it is transcendence itself. No me interfering with it. So now, we come again to see the senses and the operation of the senses in a new light. I've used this phrase several times before. The senses are the living cords of communion. Transcendence sees and hears through your eyes and through your ears. It knows through your brain. You are the Holy Grail. You are the vessel, the open vessel, as I said a few moments ago. It's not an original phrase at all. You'll find it in the Katha Upanishad. The Lord of Death says to Nachiketas, Nachiketas is an open vessel. So now, how do we apply this kind of knowledge to our daily life? Whenever we see or hear, and here you will find the Buddhist formulation very interesting indeed. And perhaps for the first time, you will see into the tremendous implications of that Buddhist formulation. Whenever we see or hear, we are not entranced either by the general appearance of that which is seen or by the appearance of the particulars. We are not entranced. That is the word the Buddha uses. Enraptured by it, caught up by it, imprisoned. You are utterly free. There is no reactivity, no helpless, uncontrollable reactivity, born of conditioning, born of desire, born of the state of ignorance, born of fear, of incapacity. There is pure and complete seeing. That is how the yogi sees the perfected Holy One, the mystic who has realized sees. And when he sees like that, the power of transcendence continuously transforms the finite, that which changes, that which is mortal, that which in the ordinary way tries to hold back the stream of life because it likes this, that or the other, which tries to push aside this, that or the other because it dislikes it, and which is afraid of death and wants to stave off death. But when transcendence sees through you, you neither precipitate death nor cling to that which is actually moving away all the time. And therein is the sovereign yoga. You are completely at one with the universal process. But through you, totality functions unhindered and effects the transformation in the perfect way, unspoiled by my preconditioning, by my preconceptions of the ought-to-be's, and so forth. Don't think, therefore, that, oh, I've got nothing to do. You have everything to do. Because in the state of complete attentiveness, you are in the state of complete activity, of thought and feeling, of speech, and of physical action. But in that complete activity, there is not a single action of mind, or speech, or deed, which is an unnecessary action, which is a stupid action, which is a clumsy action. This is yoga again, if you like. Yoga is skill in action, said Sri Krishna. And everybody thinks, oh yes, you practiced the piano for 20 years, you have a good gift, and you give a wonderful recital, there's yoga in action. Yes, it is. But the way it is presented in such words just shows the ignorance of the speaker. There is divinity, there is transcendence manifesting its infinitude and its perfection through the finite. Immortality functions only through the flesh and blood and bones of mortality. So, and the same with hearing, with touching, with tasting, and so forth. So you see, the whole of life becomes one in which you can't do a single wrong thing. That is to say, a single wrong thing doesn't happen through you anymore. Of course, what is being suggested is something in apotheosis. One has always to take into account the actual fact, the what is, as Krishnamurti says. Be fully awake to the what is. Now I bring this in for a very simple reason. The starting point is not only to get hold of ideas about all this. It is not merely that, only that. but actually to be fully awake to what is, and watch the mistakes we make in interpreting the what is. If the Lord God suddenly appeared and saw a riot and murder and horrible things going on, how would the Lord God interpret that which is seen by him? Quite differently from the way I interpret it. Would the Lord God react in terms of hate, of fear, of anger, of revenge, etc.? Because if he did, he would merely have degraded himself to the level of the murderer, the thief, the adulterer, the self-indulger, and so forth, wouldn't he? He might as well not be there. More comfortable for him to be cotton-wooled upstairs in heaven. So you see, the what is has to be clearly seen all the time. Because in clearly seeing the what is, transcendence opens up the ways within us and enlightens us all the time. We discover the obstruction, namely our mode of interpreting, which is a false mode because of our conditioning, our beliefs, our convictions, our fixations, and all the rest of our defilements. Defilements of the brain, the mind, defilements of the heart. When there is that complete attentiveness, when there is the perfect silence, not merely the silence of the tongue, which is very, very important. It's the first lesson one has to learn in regard to living the holy life. To stop the tongue from wagging. And there are exceptionally few who learn even that first lesson during their whole lifetime. It's a sad fact, but there it is. It is also stopping the silent chatter in the brain, all of which uprises because it expresses the confusion and the illness of the mind. When those two are well in hand, and one has realized that state, then one sees, one experiences the inclusion of all the noise of the world, the noise within oneself to start with, and the noise outside oneself, how all that noise is part and parcel of that transcendent silence. But oneself no longer contributes towards the noise, to the making of the discords. To suggest a very gentle, kindly simile. You know how, if you can play an instrument like the piano, I choose the piano for a very simple reason, rather than the violin or a flute. If you can play the piano and you play something, you know how little children, they love it, they get excited, they come up and start making a noise. Don't they? That is what we do. I suggest it's a very kindly simile, because a little child making a noise, you just accept it pleasurably. Unless you're a bad-tempered concert artist, then you'll do something violent to the child after a few moments. So now, the attentiveness, the functioning of the senses, the continuous awareness of the actual what is, and the misinterpretations given to all that observation by my own conditioned, defiled psyche, ill psyche, all those are the elements which constitute the deep, the true discipline of the holy life, of the human life. Are we able to get at least some glimpse of what it means to live religiously? Religiously in the sense of being restored to complete relationship with totality, with transcendence. Religare, to relate back. What God hath joined, let no man put asunder. And that's exactly what the 4,000 millions do. With their thought and feeling, their speech and their action. We intrude upon holy ground. And holy ground is everywhere. There is no place you can go to, no state to which you can turn, which is not in its innermost reality, perfect holiness itself. And we constantly intrude upon it. We are not awake, and we deliberately do not wake up. Therefore, it is so easy to be inconsiderate, to do the silly thing, the foolish thing. It is so easy to be self-obtrusive egoistically upon any and every situation where we find ourselves. But if we begin to wake up, then the whole situation undergoes a change. A change which straightens out our own inner being, puts us in line with the trends of life abundant, and enables us to be the instruments of realization of the utter beauty and the wonder of all existence by transcendence through you yourself, the finite expression of that transcendence.